The EMS Educast is a podcast by and for EMS educators. Every week, our panel of education experts hosts a program that brings you the latest and greatest in EMS education technology, methods, and techniques. Your hosts will regularly bring you guests from all over the world to tell you about innovative EMS education programs and experiences in other places. Join us each week for the EMS Educast. And visit www.emseducast.com to subscribe with iTunes or the RSS feed, listen to archived shows, and view future show descriptions. The EMS Educast.
Listeners, this is Greg Fries on behalf of Bill Toon and Rob Terrio. We're always glad to be bringing you a new episode of the EMS Educast. We're always thrilled to have your interactions at facebook.com/EMS Educast and visiting EMSEducast.com for all the episodes in the archives. And then, of course, supporting all the other great EMS and health-related podcasts that are available at the ProMed Network. Jamie Davis and his crew are doing just some fantastic work there. Rob, I imagine you're like many of our listeners and either at or near the end of the academic semester.
Yes, sir. Today was the last set of exams for my group.
Okay.
And, for my particular courses. And so the next 6 days, just marking.
Marking. And do you have like a lot of essay exams, or you have to take computer-based test scores out of the computer and put them into a grade book?
No. So, you know, my motto has always been work smarter, not harder. So what I do is I have three exams for every course, and the first two exams are a mixture of multiple choice, mix and match, and short answer. And the final exams are always multiple choice because I'm got a ton of essay marking and assignment marking, so I make my final exams easy for me.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, yeah, and hopefully your students have a good sense of where they stand so there won't be any surprises in the days to come.
Yeah, they generally know.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. There's a big cloud, black cloud hanging over some of them. Doom.
Hopefully not, but they're all doing okay to extraordinarily well in theory.
Oh, good. Well,
so, yeah.
As their theory instructor, I would hope that you are teaching them theory well.
I hope so.
Good.
I hope so.
Bill, do you miss the days where in the waning weeks of December you could be marking exams and papers and deciding who carries on to the next semester of paramedic class?
Yeah, it was always a little bit of a shock for a few.
Yeah. Maybe, though, that was sort of like the old days of education. Maybe in these newer days, you maybe would have given students more feedback as they went along, so there was no surprises.
Oh, no, I gave them lots of feedback quite often. But, you know, some people need the cosmic 2x4 anyway before they realize.
Yeah, huh. Well,
the cosmic 2x4.
Is that in the shape of an F? Is that what you mean?
Well, that's one way that you could look at it, yes, in the shape of an F, you know. But sometimes they just need that
the
dose of reality.
Yeah.
The metaphorical sledgehammer.
Right.
Yes. Yes.
Right. Well, we're glad to have you, and Rob as well, and listeners, so thrilled to have you. Also glad to introduce tonight's guest, and I've blown it again, Paul Hassenmeyer. Is that how you pronounce your last name, Paul?
Yeah, that's pretty good. You could say Hassenmeyer and add the German twist to it, but
okay.
That's pretty good.
All right. Well, it's sort of my – maybe it's an ongoing blooper, Rob, that I always forget to ask our guests how to actually pronounce their last name. So, Paul, welcome to the EMS Educast.
Glad to be here.
Well, do you speak German, Paul?
No, absolutely not.
I can teach you how to say you look like you have diarrhea today.
Let's hear it, Rob.
Du siehst aus wie du hast Teufelheiten, if I recall. And I remember this because a German girl moved to our school, and I really wanted to go out with her. So I asked a classmate who spoke German how to say, would you like to go out with me? And that's what he taught me.
Wow.
Nice, eh?
Yeah. And now you're married to her.
No.
Okay.
That would have been a good story, though.
Well, I always respond to the question about do you speak German with nicht sehr gut, not very good. That's maybe, but bitte. Not nearly as entertaining as Rob's Dussel. Dussel diddle is what you call it?
Yeah.
So, Paul, you're here because quite a few months ago, you wrote a blog post, and I read it, and I thought, this is very interesting, about education levels, between differences maybe between the field personnel or the line personnel and the management or leadership in an organization. And then you've been very gracious to work with me on several scheduling changes through the month. So thank you for that. But before we dig into the topic, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to Rob and Bill and I and the listeners, and just to really dig into who you are, what you do, how you got into fire and EMS. And, you know, we got time here, so give us the details.
All right. I can give you a little bit of a story. I'm really fairly young, just turned 34. So, when I graduated high school, I really, didn't have a great plan of what I wanted to do. I did 2 years of block and mortar, college at Bowling Green State University. And I skipped around majors a couple times, sports management and, some history education, that sort of things. And, had a little bit too much fun, worked for a landscape company in the summers in between semesters, and some of the guys on the crew were firefighters. And it ended up several times I got drugged to the firehouse when they got calls. They broke away from the job, and that kind of perked my interest a little bit. So after that second summer after high school, I really just said, you know what? I'm going to go to fire school. So I went to, started a 36-hour volunteer class that we have in Ohio and EMT basic at the same time. And then, right after that, I got on one, here in fire department in Ohio part-time, and then went right into professional firefighter level training. And right after that went into paramedic. And somewhere in the mix there, I got hired on another part-time or a combination fire department, working for them a little bit, and still doing landscaping to make a little money to pay for it all. And then I was lucky enough to get hired full-time by the city of Sandusky in Ohio as a firefighter EMT basic while I was in paramedic school. And that was when I was 22, so I got... You know, I worked hard there initially, and but I attribute a lot of it to being in the right place at the right time and a little bit of luck. From there, I did 2 years full-time at Sandusky, finished my medic, and then I, in 2004, took a full-time position at the city of Huron, where I'm currently at still now, and kind of from that transition, I started doing a whole lot of technical rescue stuff. I went to every class I could afford to, and every class my fiance and my wife, we got married in 2003, so every chance I got, I'd spend the money and go to technical rescue.
For a second, I thought you were talking about two different women.
Right.
When you said my fiance and my wife.
Well, we got married in 2003, so it kind of overlapped a little bit there. So I did a lot of technical rescue training and so forth, a lot of extrication, heavy rescue stuff. And somewhere around 2007, 2005, 6, and 7, I started sending myself to some fire officer classes and kind of getting that side of the education on top of the tech rescue side of things. And then 2007, I said, you know what? I got 2 years of block and mortar college. I really ought to finish a degree at some point. So I kind of grew up there a little bit. So I went back and finished an associate's in fire science and then took a couple months off. And then I went right into finishing a bachelor's in fire science. And then that was about, I got all that done by somewhere in 2010, I think. Got promoted to a line officer position in 2009. And then 2010 or early 2011, it was pretty good conversation with my wife about furthering my education even farther and pursuing a master's degree. And I chose to do it in public administration, thinking down the line it may be beneficial in a management leadership. As I move up the chain of command a little bit, it'll be beneficial. So I pursued that, did that, and actually just completed that last June, amongst taking other classes related to the fire service and a whole bunch of teaching. On the family side of things, I've been married for just over 10 years. I have three daughters, or almost 5 and 3. And my free time, I fish on Lake Erie. I do some triathlons. Last September, I finished a half Ironman, which was the first time I did that, and play a lot of Barbies.
Uh-huh.
And
that's awesome.
Right?
You have to be secure in your virility to do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Paul, I guess I have two questions for you, and then I bet Bill wants to dig in as well. Just, did you have like a mentor or officer or somebody at saying to you, hey, you should get some more education and go back and finish that bachelor's degree? Or was this all just your sort of on your own decision to make all that happen?
There was quite a few guys on the rescue side of things that impressed me and taught me a lot along the ways. And I think that's why I pursued tech rescue pretty early in my career. And that taught me a lot about operations and working together and teams and so forth. Actually my battalion chief when I was in Sandusky, he was a well-educated guy and understood people and took care of people. And that influenced me. And then actually my grandfather, he said before he died, he said, you're going to go back and get your degree now that you got a full-time job. And that always kind of stuck with me. And, I had 2 years on the books. So let's do something with it or get that piece of paper. And then, it's quite a bit of self-motivation too, go to the next step, do that bachelor's. And then, the master's right now, I'm going to have to start paying that loan back. It hasn't really paid off yet, but hopefully here into the future it will. Mm-hmm. Not only by being able to provide for the family better, but, help an organization, help my organization and help others along the way as well. So I've had on the national circuit and being able to teach and present and travel a little bit. Tiger Schmittendorf, he's a deputy fire coordinator of the Erie County.
Mm-hmm.
Up there near Buffalo, or Buffalo is the county seat of Erie County, New York. He's been instrumental in giving me a little bit of advice and giving me a shot to teach with him a couple times. So that's been good. Dr. Harry Carter in New Jersey, he provided quite a bit of direction when I was picking a school for my master's, and I was able to bounce some questions off of him during that schooling, which was very helpful. And I still chat with those guys all the time, and some of the great line guys and rescue guys and company officers and even firefighters with years of experience have provided me helpful tips. So, I got more people to thank than we have time for.
So listeners, Tiger Schmittendorf might be a familiar name because he was on episode 109, and he actually had one of my all-time most memorable lines on this podcast. We were talking about kids these days. He said their expectation is clear expectations, and we will put a link to that that episode 109 in the show notes. So thanks for mentioning him and giving me a chance to plug something from the archives. I hear a lot of people say to me, I'd say, well, why haven't you finished a degree or even started? And they're like, oh, I just don't have time. I got family. I got this job, and I got another job, and I'm trying to teach this or that. And you added in that you're also doing triathlons. Like, how'd you make the time to get all that schoolwork done and do all those other things?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I've had guys ask me that over and over again, and at my firehouse alone, there's a couple guys working on their associate's degree now, and, you know, I've worked to, you know, kind of coach them along and say, you know what, that's going to help you, it's going to help us, it's going to help the fire service in the future. Making time for it wasn't easy, to be honest. I started my master's when my youngest was one, and for those about 2 years I was doing the master's, maybe a little less because I doubled up a couple classes. You know, the kids went to bed around 9 or before, or a little after some nights, and I was up to 1-2 in the morning every night for those years studying, and then back up in the morning to work. Or I've been swimming quite a bit and running, and then last year was the first year I've been talking about doing triathlons, and got a couple other buddies that have done them, and last year was the first year I did some shorter distance races and then did the half Ironman distance. But you know, that was the swimming and being on the bike were kind of the times to relax and be away from everything, because there wasn't a computer, there wasn't an email, there wasn't cell phone, anything to kind of get in your head. You just had time to relax, work out, and kind of be away from the world for a little bit to keep that energy going. So it worked out well. It's tough. Guys that dive into, you know, finishing their degrees when they're working full-time and have a family and another part, everybody in the fire and EMS service seems like everybody's got a B job.
Right. And
doing all that stuff, it's a time commitment. I've told people over and over again, my wife and daughters are saints for, you know, putting up with that. And, you know, was I on the computer typing papers? Did that take away from the family at some times? Yeah, but we tried to make dedicated times for family time, and then me hit the books and do that side of things and make it work. So I can't thank them enough for sure. And, you know, ultimately I hope it pays off for them too. And, my oldest two, they're old enough to, they'll remember seeing dad study his butt off.
Right.
And, you know, it takes work to reach some of those goals and, you know, just learn more, get smarter, and
we could turn this into a Jerry Springer show and bring your wife on now and get her perspective on that.
Rob, sorry about that.
Only you, Rob.
You might have to censor it a little though.
Yeah, we've got a rating to protect here, guys.
Yeah, I can relate though. We can bring my wife on too.
Yeah. did you go back to Bowling Green to finish the bachelor's degree, and then the master's of public administration? Was that at going to a campus, or did you do an online program? How'd you do it?
Finished all that stuff online. Ended up at Columbia Southern for my undergrad stuff that worked well with the credits I had at Bowling Green, and then I did my master's at Capella University. It's based out of Minneapolis, and it was all online. And they did when I applied, they had they really scrutinized my undergrad and my even my resume to make it was a pretty good scrutinization of not only me but my educational background and where I wanted to go to get into the program. So I was a little scared about that at first, but you know, ultimately they wanted to make sure I could succeed in the program too, I think. So
Paul, why the switch from fire sciences to health administration? Are you looking at a sort of a trajectory in your career in more on the medical side?
Well, my undergrad was in fire science, and then I thought that was fitting at the time, just being in the fire service. And there was quite a bit of tactics and some management and leadership classes involved there and understanding fire behavior. And then the master's was in public administration. And
I'm sorry. I thought I heard health. Okay.
And the public administration, that was one of the conversations I had with Harry Carter. And before I chose not only the school, but the actual degree, and you know, I could have pursued something in, you know, disaster management or emergency management or something health related, or even fire science administration, something along those lines. And I chose public administration to kind of keep it broad, but also understand the human resource, budgeting, leadership, quantitative and qualitative aspects of that. The, you know, ethics, personal leadership development, and that's kind of what our topic is going to be as we go forward in the conversation. But so I ended up going that route thinking, you know, if and when I move up the chain of command anymore, that type of education is going to be beneficial. There was a whole lot on strategic planning, and that's huge, you know, and fire and EMS organizations and finding a way to be sustainable into the future. And so that's kind of how I ended up with public administration. And I'm now looking back, I'm glad I made that decision. I'm glad I had that conversation with Dr. Carter, and it'll seems to be working out, or it provides me with a lot of knowledge that I didn't have before and I might not get elsewhere.
So a question for you, what's your current position now that you're doing?
I'm a lieutenant on the fire department. It's a small combination department. So middle management, line supervisor, line officer. Still take my day on the medic. Some days I'm on the first in engine going to car wrecks and so forth. And other days I'm on riding backwards on the engine going to fire. So, and some days I'm sitting in the front seat on the engine.
So if you're riding in the back, that means there's a captain or someone that's on right. The unit at that point.
Right. Exactly.
And so how many people are typically how many direct people do you directly supervise in your current position?
Depends on the day. If the captain's there, then I'll give you a little story about from, it's been over 10 years ago now, but we had a pretty big fire. And at the time, there was a chief and three captains. And there's four guys on each shift, small combination department. And at this big fire, there was mutual aid. There was about 75 firefighters there. And the officers, the firefighters, that whole level of management wasn't there. So they added a lieutenant to each shift. So the shift's comprised right now of captain, lieutenant, two firefighters. So depending on the day, if the captain's there, I'm helping assist and manage those two guys. If the captain's off, then I got three under me. Where it really comes into play is the incident scenes where the captain can go one way, give me an assignment to take crews another way. and manage those guys on the fire ground and outside the firehouse as well. So it works pretty well for us because we have about 26 or so part-time guys on the staff too that come in for car wrecks and fires. We're right on Lake Erie, so there's always water-related incidents, dive team.
So what do you think, with all your education that you've done to date, what do you think has helped you the most class-wise?
The topic tonight that we'll get into, leadership and how to breach that leader's fear education topic, I'm probably going to get into more research on that as time goes on. But I think some of the most beneficial stuff that I've done for my master's especially was the strategic planning aspect of it and human resource management. I was able to work with a fire chief in a jurisdiction close by and review, for my main project for that class, I reviewed the human resource management procedures and policies and of their organization and gave him a 30-page document on what I saw from an outsider's perspective and some recommendations and so forth. So I think that's the planning, and we have to be planning for the future and sustainable, you know, thoughts for our organization. So that's going to be, you don't get that in fire school. You don't get that in paramedic school. And that's valuable in my mind.
Your story and your accomplishments is really admirable. And I hope it's inspiring to other people, especially those that are on the fence about whether they finish or pursue a degree. And, you know, we're regularly encouraging people to just get started. How's it sort of changed your relationship, I guess, both with like your peers, but also the people you report to as you've furthered your education through the years?
I did a lot of studying on duty at night, you know, if we were slow as far as call volume. And, I took a little bit of heat for that, you know, always being on the computer or in the book reading or taking notes or so forth. But, you know, I think I try to share some of that information that I was learning, and, you know, not to overwhelm guys, but to share it and try to share it in a way that showed them that, you know what, this type of stuff will benefit the organization and it'll benefit us moving forward. On my supervisor's side of things, there was a couple different papers that I wrote that were kind of applicable to what was going on at the firehouse at the time, or something we were thinking about. So they sometimes read that, and then we integrated it into some of the officer meetings and talked about some of those things. One of the biggest things that on that side of things was my final project for my master's was really taking a look at our jurisdiction, our call volume, where the call volume is. And right now we're running full-time out of one station. We have a township station. And that final project was looking at, would it be beneficial to the community and the customers to man that second station and put an ambulance out there in a fire truck to improve the response time, not only the fires, but EMS. And, you know, minutes, you know, the response times of some of the areas would have been improved greatly. So we had that project, got into that, and that was presented to some of the, you know, the leaders of the fire department. And now it's in their hands for further action and development, and see where it goes from here moving forward.
So I think it's pretty. I think it's great to have had, especially if you were to, you know, keep advancing your career. I mean, that's sort of like a real world challenge that managers and chiefs are having is, you know, deployment and staffing and expansion or consolidation. To have already, you know, taken that on, should be a good experience to have as you move forward, I would think.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's in its infancy, just the very initial thoughts on it and, you know, where it could go and still deciding, is it needed? Would the community support it and so forth? And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see where it goes in, into the future. And, yeah, you know, we have to plan for the future and is there going to be more development? And that type of planning looks at demographics and location and population and response times. And are we having more fires in this area? Are we running squad calls to this occupancy more than here and so forth? That, you know, that's that type of planning looks into all that stuff.
Yeah. So the blog post that I read many months ago was about, and my paraphrasing may be wrong, so correct me here, but just that when leaders within an organization fear the or have apprehension about the levels of education of subordinates, especially when subordinates have accomplished more formal education than the leadership level has, is that, did I sort of capture the essence of it?
Yeah, the title on that article for Fire Engineering was Fire Service Leadership Fear Education? ? And it was the original paper was for my ethics and personal leadership development class for my master's. And I talked to Chief Bobby Halton when I was done with that paper and kind of shot the idea towards him. And he said, you know what, take your paper, cut it down a little bit, clean it up, make it not so, you know, change it from the master's project submission to so it fits in the magazine. And so I did and submitted it. And, yeah, he ran with it and Fire Engineering published it up.
Now, did you decide to write that based on your own experience, your own perceptions? What prompted that?
You know, I think a combination of some of all of that. Not so much my experiences, but more so of feedback. You know, I would always get questions, why are you doing your bachelor's or why are you doing your master's? And, you know, those are fair questions because guys know it costs money, it's time, and some of the other things that we talked about already. But some of the surprising parts or aspects of it that I thought were guys coming up to me when I was teaching here, there, and everywhere. And, you know, after they found out I had some degrees or education and saying, you know, it just seems like I got this education, but now I can't help my organization a whole lot, or I'm not being allowed to, or ideas. So that's where, for the master's class, I started doing the research and trying to seek that out. And there's not a whole lot of concrete stuff written on the topic. And that's, you know, something we're going to have to look at into the future and how do we overcome those challenges and, you know, the implications that relate to the fire service and EMS organizations and moving forward.
Do you worry that some of your superiors feel threatened by your degrees, your education? Or because it sounds like you have a very humble approach with your colleagues about your education and that you're really more interested in improving the service, not in sort of climbing over people up the corporate ladder. Is your sense that they pretty comfortable with that, or do you think some perceive that it's a threat?
Yeah, in my organization, I'm not sure I can answer that accurately because I don't know. I've never had the conversation straight up with anybody that says, you know, are you fearful of the education, my education, thinking that, you know, I'm going to overrun the place. I've never had that conversation, but I can also, you know, do they maybe not know how to run with an idea or topic that I present, or some of that master's level strategic planning ideas that I've brought up, you know, that may be some of the maybe not fear, but just not knowing, you know, where to go next, and should we do that or should we not? Because they, you know, some of the guys don't have that education, and maybe not so much fearing me, but fearing where we should go and how we should do that.
Yeah. So, what would you like to do from this point forward? What direction would you like to go? And at the same time, what advice would you give to other people in the course that you've just taken? I mean, the process, the steps you've taken to get to where you're at. So, what do you want to do with what you have, and what advice would you have for others?
Yeah, one, I've always kind of had the mentality to get as much education and training to have options, and to, you know, I'm not looking to leave the Huron Fire Department or the organization, any of the organizations I'm involved with currently, you know, but I've also put a lot of time, money, and sweat equity into the education I have to, you know, opportunities will come up, and you know, I've been asked that question, you know, quite a bit, but ultimately right now, it's any move from my current position would have to evolve around the premise that it's best for you know, my wife and my three daughters. So right now I don't have any plans of going anywhere. As far as some advice for somebody looking to, oh, even get into the fire service. I teach at a local fire academy, and guys always has those questions, or guys that are in the service already looking for, you know, maybe pursue that degree. Is, you know, my best advice is any education you can get is to go after it. And, you know, you have to invest yourself in your time, and you know, it's going to improve not only you, you're going to get smarter and, you know, gain experience through the schooling and training, but you're going to help the organization and the guys you're working with on the line, day to day too. So, and jump feet first into it. Just my cousin, she's a principal, and she's got a whole lot of education behind her name, and I called her because she's a smart person, and before I finally said I was going to do my master's, I asked her about it, and she said, you know what, you're young now, do it now while the kids are little, you can study at night, because it's not going to get any easier to do it, you know, and that meant something. And my wife's sister, who's a assistant principal and highly educated, she told me the same thing, just do it and it'll be over before you're done, and then you have all that extra knowledge and experience. So yeah, sometimes you need somebody there just to kick you in the butt a little bit and say, just do it. It works out.
Do you think the day will come in fire and EMS organizations where somebody with your level of education, and not to mention the sort of drive to get it done, becomes the norm and not the exception?
What are you calling me, an exception?
No, I'm calling you exceptional.
You know, there's man, that's a tough question. And I guess I would hope so. I have hope that, you know, type of education and training and drive and motivation to improve not only yourself but the organization you work for, which in turn helps the people that you're serving, you know, I hope it gets to that point more so than it is now. You know, we see over the last 5 years, I've kind of noticed the fire service in general putting a higher importance on college education. You know, we're seeing some entry-level positions requiring not only fire and EMS stuff, but an associate's degree in fire science. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's, I think we're going to see that moving forward as more the norm. Okay. And then expand on that. You know, and should line officers have at least an associate's? Should captains, battalions have that bachelor's degree? Should chief level officers have a master's? You know, that's where I kind of foresee a lot of places going to. Because look at the executive fire officer program now at the National Fire Academy. You have to have a bachelor's to get into that, and that's highly competitive. And you know, the EFO program, those are comparable to master's level classes, and you know, more places are requiring a master's level or executive fire officer or both. Maybe not both yet, but someday for chief officers. Right. So yeah, it's gonna keep building that professionalism that the fire service seems to be reaching towards.
Yeah. Bill, I have a question for you as a battalion chief for training in your department. What do you do to, I guess, and maybe you don't, but have a culture where it's okay for people, once the sort of like duties, station duties are done and they're not running calls, to open the books and or turn on a computer and work on their coursework if they're working towards a degree? Like, how do you make that happen?
There is no limitation. We strongly encourage it. And I would say a lot of our employees are currently pursuing higher education degrees. You know, the state of Kansas is a state that, to be, if you've taken your paramedic training program in the state, you have to at a minimum graduate with an associate's degree, unless you already have a bachelor's degree. Then you don't have to get the associate's degree. But a lot of our employees are going on to complete their programs, and they're doing it through traditional classes, accelerated programs, as well as online. We do have an alternative shift. It's called D-shift, and employees that are actively going to school typically will try to get on this alternative shift, and it usually lets them work around their full-time school schedule and still lets them get in their hours during the week. But it's strongly encouraged. You have to be, other than years in service, which is a minimum of 3, you have to have a minimum of an associate's degree even to apply for the position of lieutenant. And here within the organization, to go for battalion chief, you have to have a bachelor's degree minimum. So the education is strongly encouraged.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be more the norm, kind of spreading across the country moving forward in years to come. And, you know, there's a guy on my shift right now that he's working towards his associate's degree, and I can echo that. We give him, if his daily duties and his general responsibilities that he has and going on calls, but beyond that, if he wants to study all afternoon, if he's got his other jobs done, we encourage that, and, you know, give him that time so he can, you know, and that helps. He's going to help us with that knowledge, and, you know, we're kind of helping him by, he doesn't have to spend that some of that time at home too, away from his family.
Right. Well, guys, we're nearing the end of our hour together. Rob first, and then Bill, a final comment or question for Paul.
Just want to say thank you, Paul, for coming on the show. It sounds like you've done really well in your career, and hopefully you'll be an inspiration to others who want to make a difference with their service.
Agreed.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate the confidence, and I'll throw a couple links up for you guys to share with the audience. And a couple of these articles and the fire service leadership fear education articles linked on my blog, firstyoutackle.com, so the listeners can go check that out too. And there's also one on that I did a little bit of a comparison on company officers and crab boat deck bosses leadership characteristics. And you know, I've been a big fan of the Deadliest Catch show, and I started about 2 years ago, started watching the deck bosses and how they lead those guys in the worst of times. And I started thinking, you know, company officer, they're leading guys in some pretty tough conditions at times too. And so that's a pretty good quick little article for guys to read too.
Yeah, we'll put those in the show notes. Yeah, I've always found that Deadliest Catch I haven't watched recently, but sort of fascinating studies in leadership and motivation, especially as the sleep deprivation piles up and the weather turns bad, and you know, everybody's doing the math of how much they're going to get paid, and it makes for compelling television for sure. Bill, do you have a final comment or question?
Paul, I'll echo Rob's statement there. Thank you very much for coming on and sharing with us, and good luck in your future endeavors and everything, and continuing to encourage other people to follow your path.
Right, yeah. You know, across the header of my blog, it says pass it on. You know, I've had great conversation with Tiger Schmittendorf again about that. And, you know, we're not necessarily in a sprint nor a marathon in fire and EMS, but you know, it's a long distance relay race, and we got to pass on what we learned to the next generation so they can pass it on to the next generation of people in the service. And you know, that's how we get better, that's how we grow, and ultimately create one heck of a powerful force for public welfare and taking care of people.
Yeah. Well, that's a great outlook to have, and I think a real positive example to set. We're fortunate to have you as a guest on the show, but also a teacher and mentor for other fire and EMS professionals working on a degree. I was just thinking when Bill and Rob were giving you accolades, I should say, you know, what are you wasting an hour with us? You should be working on your PhD right now.
Well, see, that's where my wife will come back into the room screaming, saying, "You're not even going to think about that until you pay this master's off."
There you go. Yeah, so, good.
Jerry Springer time.
Yeah.
Right.
Paul and our listeners, we'd like to wrap up the show with a recommendation. Maybe it's an article or an app or a book or an event, something coming up that you want to share with other EMS educators. So, Paul, you said you had a couple of books on the desk next to you that you wanted to make sure you shared. What were the books that you had?
Yeah, well, you got the link for the Fire Service Leadership Fear Education article. Yep. That I put out, and that's kind of the premise behind quite a bit of our conversation, and they can check out that. You know, those there's no concrete solutions, and it's you know, we're looking for, you know, a gold standard in everything that we do, but it takes a little work to figure some of these things out. But a couple books I got sitting on my desk that I think kind of apply. And at the beginning of the show, I did talk about I was a history major for a little while, and I still read a lot of history books and leadership guys and autobiographies and so forth. And one that comes to mind is it's titled Lincoln on Leadership, Executive Strategies for Tough Times by Donald T. Phillips. And that brings a lot of insight into, you know, years back and President Lincoln's mentality and some of the leadership characteristics that he displayed and leading leading people and managing people and taking care of people ultimately. Another one is another book I pulled off my shelf was Flawless Execution. It's on some of the techniques and systems of America's fighter pilots and how to perform at your peak to win battles. You know, for them it was around the world, but for us it's in business, it's in our organizations, fire and EMS, and how do we execute flawlessly? And ultimately it comes back to taking care of people. So that's a good one that is worth a read. And then actually I've been wanting to read for years, and I just my neighbor across the street picked it up at the library for me, and it's Chief John Salka's book, First In, Last Out. And you know, he puts a perspective in the book that relates to the fire service, but also it relates to the business world and any organization on leading people, taking care of those people, and they're the assets of our organization. And we take care of them. They take care of the people in our communities, and we're a pretty powerful force. So that's a good one to read too. It's a pretty quick read, and you probably get a lot out of it.
Great. Thanks, Paul, for those book recommendations. We'll have links to those in the show notes for listeners to go find those at Amazon.com, or I suppose other places you can buy or check out books.
Yeah, sure.
Rob, how about you?
I might have mentioned this before, but I want to remind our listeners that there's a Coursera course coming up in February. Starts February the 3rd, I believe, yeah, February the 3rd, 2014, called Instructional Methods in Health Professions Education. It's being offered by the University of Michigan, and a colleague of mine took it and said it was really good. So that's my recommendation for the week.
It's good to know somebody that's taken it. I had signed up for that on the first offering, and then I kind of looked at what they had planned, and I thought, no, this seems like maybe it's just going to be too basic. But your friend had a good experience?
Yeah, she's a CCU nurse, and she quite liked it. She said there was quite a bit of educational theory in it. So if you're an educator and you haven't studied educational theory, and I certainly haven't studied it a great deal, she said it was quite good.
Okay, and
but we'll blame her if it's not. So
okay, yeah. You can send me a link for that. I'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah.
So my recommendation is Tom Boothelet on the EMS 12 Lead blog a couple days ago published a post, Why Do We Send So Many People to a Cardiac Arrest? And he talks about his experiences. He gets to travel around the country and even the world, and explains that on Hilton Head, where he's, I believe, a captain for the Hilton Head Fire Department, how they're sending 9 to 11 people, an ambulance, two engines, and a battalion chief to all cardiac arrest calls, and how his words, that people are absolutely gobsmacked by the number of rescuers being sent to a call. And he goes on to explain why it is that they do what they do, and sort of the outcomes that come from that. It's a fairly short post. And then also, I guess, a fascinating set of comments about, you know, why other people's one or two person or three person crews are far superior to Tom's 9 to 11 person responses, for no better reason than this is the way we've always done it. But that is well worth reading. And then there just seems to be a whole flurry of posts and articles recently about different sorts of mechanical CPR devices. And so I think those are – it's something that's continuing to be worth reading. I didn't get the order of my words correctly there, but keep reading about those mechanical CPR devices, I say. Bill, bail me out with their language.
Tool of the devil. That might be a little dramatic for the mechanical devices. Still, I don't think they're proven. I think there's a place for them, and I'm not 100% sure where they are. But I think they need to be appropriately integrated, and it's a very expensive option where there may be a better way to invest your money and time. But
I thought you were referring to my language skills as a tool of the devil.
Those of us who can't afford a 9-person crew on a cardiac arrest.
No, not even necessarily that, but there's something to be said. You know what you know, this might be a little lame, but the most important thing I want to pass on to our listeners is that you should be constantly reading. You should be picking up something more than just your trade journals, and you should be trying to perfect your craft all the time. And yeah. You need to do it through a variety of methods. And I don't care whether it's read a newspaper that you should do daily, to reading a journal that is a peer-reviewed journal and stuff, and you should be trying to do something every single day to perfect your craft. And reading is just such a valuable tool to do that. And I just really want to encourage people. And, you know, I scan EMS1, EMS World, and GEMS online all the time. I switch over and I look at Fire Engineering, Firehouse, the iChief stuff, and I scan those, but equally, well, not equally, about 3 or 4 times that, I do, of course, a lot of the journals that are out there related to medicine and stuff, because I have this thirst to read, and I want to encourage all of you to do it. There's nothing preventing you from doing it other than finding the time. So even if it's just one article out of your 3 24-hour shifts, it's a good investment of your time.
I had mentioned this maybe long ago on this show, but I had a professor in graduate school, and he said if you read 30 minutes a day of anything in your related to your field, you'll be in the top 5% of your field.
Mm. So I agree.
I like that.
It's and that breaks it down in a pretty easy way. And whether it's like you said, trade publications, peer-reviewed journals, textbooks. New York Times in the last 2 weeks has had 2 very EMS-focused stories, one about the cost of ambulance transport and the other one about this FEMA guidelines advocating that about mass shooter response, including EMS personnel operating in the warm zone with the law enforcement escort. So it's out there. There's lots and lots of stuff to read. So great recommendation.
And audiobooks.
And audiobooks, yes. Podcasts. Oh, do you think podcasts is equivalent, Bill, to reading something?
Oh, yeah. I believe there's a place for podcasts, absolutely, for sure, as well as books on tape.
Okay. Well, Paul, thanks so much for being part of the EMS Educast. We've really enjoyed getting to know you and appreciate the work you're doing, and keep it up. And hopefully we'll have a chance to meet you face-to-face at the Fire EMS conference down the road.
All right, sounds good. Thanks for having me.
All right. Listeners, we're going to add one more note here at the end of this show. So what you're hearing, if you've made it this far, I suppose, is a few months ago I shared with Bill and Rob that, you know, I guess we all have demands on our free time, and I've just decided this hobby of recording the EMS Educast, I want to do some other hobbies. So in your feed of the EMS Educast, this will be your third to last show. And the second to last show we've already recorded with Dr. Ben Abella talking about his instruction of the Coursera Massive Open Online course about cardiac arrest resuscitation. And then Bill and Rob and I will record a final show together that will be the final EMS Educast from us. The EMS Educast very well could carry on. Chris Montera, I like to call him our executive producer. This is still his domain name and his website, and all these episodes will be available for as long as he continues to make the website available, and the actual audio files are stored in a place called archive.org. So as far as I know, Rob, they're not going anywhere. So this stuff will be around as long as the internet's around, right?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
And the EMS Educast doesn't necessarily have to end. It's just specifically my involvement and Rob and Bill bowing out at the same time. You know, if somebody has always been listening and thinking, gosh, you know, if I hosted this show, I would do this, this, and this, and make it even more wonderful and useful. This could be your opportunity to step up and keep the brand alive, because I, you know, we've got a global audience of EMS educators. We'll get more into, I suppose, highlights, farewells, and such in that final episode. But Bill and Rob, what do you want to say about this announcement?
Boy, it's been for me personally, it's been a fantastic experience, and I've really enjoyed co-hosting the show with you and Bill. And it's hard; it's really hard to sum up everything that I've gained personally from this show, including, you know, meeting a lot of EMS colleagues in the United States, which has been great. And you know, one of the best things is it's we've got listeners from all over the world,
right.
And the EMS community has become a shrinking community. And partly through the show, we've been able to reach out to people from around the world and get to know our EMS colleagues from the farthest reaches of the globe. And so I think it's truly been fantastic. But you know, there comes a time where you have to gracefully bow out and allow others to take the reins, and this is the time for us.
Right. I agree. Thanks. And let's we'll do look forward to that episode with Dr. Bella, and then final episode we'll do more highlights and memories. Bill, any thoughts on this announcement before we wrap up?
No, I'm sure it may come as a surprise for some of our listeners, but again, I think you said the most important thing. There still is an opportunity for it to continue on, but I think it's a chance for someone else to pick up the baton and run down the road. But like Rob, I've learned wonderful things from this experience, but it's time to pursue other activities.
Wonderful. Well, guys, as always, it's an honor to talk. Listeners, thanks for helping us be successful and listening to the show and sharing your feedback. And look for those final two episodes, and we'll talk to you again soon.